This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Riverdale After Dark, a podcast about the CW's Riverdale that's getting a little bit misty and playing misty for the old fog. I'm Alex.
When you dwell in darkness like we do, you need something to light the way, like a candle or a couple or like, honestly, like 1,000 candles. I counted them in this episode and there's a lot of candles. So I'm opening a business in Riverdale selling candles. Check it out. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Riverdale Season 6, Episode 12, Chapter 107, In the Fog. Now, bit of recap in case you haven't been paying attention this season. Everybody has superpowers.
Every episode is someone's first episode. And
exactly.
So this one is a normal starting point. They do a lot of great, easy
recap. I've been thinking
recap.
About watching this Riverdale TV show. Let me start with 107.
Great entry point.
Listen.
I thought you were going to recap fog for a second there.
It is a weather pattern that is terrifying. Terrifying and dangerous.
It's very scary. It's
like particularly if you're on land, fog, no thanks, man.
Oh, not into it.
Not sea.
It's like a downstairs cloud fog. Most clouds are upstairs in the sky. And then when the clouds come downstairs, get yourself some fog.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I'll tell you, it's no, hold on. I'm going to hold off on my fog criticism.
The fog take? Alex has got a fog take.
I'm going to save it for the end of the podcast. We're really going to build to my hot fog take.
Hot fog.
The reason that I do the recap is, you know, I want these podcasts to be evergreen. When people are listening to our Riverdale podcast 50, 100 years from now, like, all right, that episode. You know, this helps them, like, just really catch up and really get into it.
Yeah, I hope they have holograms of how we look right now that projects.
I'm sure 100...
5 years younger. That's all.
I'm sure 100 years from now, someone's going to be like, you know what? I want to look up what three white guys thought about this amazing show.
Three white guys, Riverdale thoughts. I don't know why I'm doing the clicking of the keyboard. Keyboards aren't a good exist.
Yeah, just gonna they're not going to exist.
Do it with our tongues.
It's going to be a thought. Yeah, it's just, what?
We'll have keyboards in our mouths. Our teeth will be the keys, says Alex. Alex, I can't believe you're holding your hot fog take, but you got your futuristic keyboard take dropping.
Crazy, man. So everybody has been getting superpowers in the town of Riverdale. Jughead can hear people's thoughts. Archie is super strong.
Not everybody.
Invulnerable. Most people invulnerable.
Yep. Good pee-pee.
Cheryl found out that she is a pyrokinetic. She can control fire. Betty can see evil auras. And now Tabitha can time travel. And they're all building to an epic battle against Percival Pickens, who is the personification of the devil, we think, who also has the power to coerce people's minds. He's been working with / influencing Alice in particular to slowly take over the town, including the town council, among other things. And last episode, Tabitha actually kind of stopped him using time travel, which is the first big fall backwards loss. That's what that word is. Loss for Percival Pickens that we've seen so far this season.
It's crazy. We don't know the word
spring
loss.
Spring ahead, fall backwards. Loss. That's what I was trying to get to.
Words work. Words aren't important for a podcast, right?
Yeah. Nope. Let's get back to your keyboard take. Let's really focus on that.
Please stop making that noise. Please stop.
He's typing.
In any case, other things that are going on, Veronica owns a casino as part of a breakup with Reggie. She kicked him out of the casino. We see the fallout of that this episode. She's also grappling with the death of her father, Hiram. Who knows how he died, but it was because she called a hit on him. So kind of her fault a little bit.
It might be a slow hit where he's just slowly feeding him like too much saturated fat or something.
We're all dying of a slow hit.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
That's it.
Some of us faster than others.
Life is the ultimate slow hitman, is what they
Kevin
say.
Has also been under the thrall of Percival Pickens, though the other thing that he is dealing with, unclear whether it has to do with Percival or not, though I'd venture probably a little bit, is he is in a custody battle with Tony and Fangs for baby Anthony. Both Fangs and Kevin, when they were married, had the baby and adopted the baby, or were supposed to adopt the baby, but that all kind of fell apart. And back in the day, he had a little bit of things with Moose, who left town as a trucker. We also delve into the Gargoyle King, who was the villain back in season three.
Ooh, I won't get too much into that. That was
very exciting.
Yeah.
And Penelope Blossom is Cheryl's mom. There's a lot of history you need to delve into there, but the short version is she has always gone directly for Cheryl and hated Cheryl. We finally get to the root of that in this episode, which is a very big deal. And
she's back in the habit.
Come on, man.
Best pun in the business. Sister Act 2 back in the habit.
Archie and Betty are together. Jughead and Tabitha are together. Veronica and Reggie are broken up. Tony and Fangs are together. And we do delve into a lot of relationship stuff and have actual conversations this episode. That was the big thing critically that I want to talk about right off. I love this episode. Well, critically, positively critically, talking about it in a critical aspect. I love this episode because they took the time to give everybody conversations that they should have, mind you, had season and a half ago. But I thought that was great. Like, going into this episode, I expected the whole fog thing would be this terrifying, spooky monsters coming out of the fog all over the nest.
You didn't see it in the school? Poor Kev barely made it out of there.
That was a dream, man.
Or was it? Because we woke up, the fog was coming into the room.
We woke up?
Were you there?
We're all watching it and inside it at the same time, right?
Oh, yeah. Maybe this episode of Riverdale was just us having a collective dream.
Sorry, I forgot to recap the character of Pete LePage on this character.
That's a long one. I don't know if we got time for this.
Well, that goes way back. There's a lot of deep stuff going on there. I loved the conversations. I thought that was great to spend the time. There were so many like good emotional moments. We haven't gotten that was for so long on the show. It made me very happy to see.
It almost felt like they were like, okay, put a fog up so everyone just sits still for a second so we can deal with some stuff.
Force everybody to be in one place.
I love that. Like, I loved.
Go
ahead.
You're going to say critically and not bring up big candles. I mean, this was an episode for like Yankee Candles, like every candle company, they must have had a huge.
I know. And let's all take a second.
Let's take
a second and list all the big candle companies. We got Yankee Candle, and let's go around the horn. Pete, you're up next. Name another candle company real quick. Alex, it's your turn next. Just make
Doesn't
sure you
Bath
got one.
Doesn't Bath & Body Works sell candles, or am I thinking?
Oh, cool.
Something?
Yeah, nice I mean, yeah, job. Sure. Any place has a candle, but I'm just saying,
Target,
big candle, JC big Body. Candle, big candle works in mysterious ways. That's why we don't know the name. Big candle is the Percival Pickens of our reality.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Because you know what everyone has in their home? Candles.
Yeah, and Pete, thank you for bringing that up in a critical respect. I really appreciate that. For people who don't know, if you had allowed me to do the recap, I would talk about the 10 years you worked at candlecritic.com. You did terrible work there.
We took candles down a peg. People are afraid to do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Your big idea was to make the whole candle out of the wick, right? So you're like, this isn't burning enough. Let's make it all wick.
Yeah. More wick is what people want.
More wick.
you were the side up guy. You were the inspiration for John Wick, right?
Originally, the
Pete LePage story got adapted. They took Pete out of it, and eventually it became John Wick.
It made more sense without me in it. Yeah.
Definitely did.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I did a quick candle count after this episode just to make sure if things go down, like if a fog rolls in, you know, you got to be ready.
Home.
Yeah, you got to be ready.
Where'd you land on how many candles?
Yeah, how many candles, Pete?
Well, you got to have 10 or more to feel safe, so I'm good.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, nice. What I was saying earlier, though, is I expected it to be like this very spooky, intense, scary episode. And there were elements of that. But like you're saying, Justin, it was much more of like the everybody gets stuck in the elevator sitcom episode where the frosts talk about stuff. And I thought that was great.
Wait, no, you guys keep glazing over this. This was spooky. Okay, Betty opened the door and it looked like a murderer was outside. Okay. Jughead was gone for hours, maybe days. We don't know. When he came back, Tabitha was worried sick. So, like, you know, it was scary out there. So I'm not going to sit around and let you guys say it wasn't scary. Did you see what the fog did to that Riverdale sign? That was
it turned the lights off, which is what happens every episode when the title hits. I mean, I think the real lesson here is relationships are the ultimate fog monster.
Well, I think that was the point, and I think that was well said, is that everybody is in this very murky place with their relationships, with their lives. They're not sure where they're going. And so to use it for that level of metaphor, this also was one of my favorite episodes of the season so far, because I've been pretty open about not loving the whole superpower. Yeah. I've been all over the place, but I haven't loved the superpower stuff. It's not really my thing, but I think the way that this episode was written and crafted, it used the superpowers to emphasize the relationships rather than the other way around. Like, it wasn't just a plot thing. Like, Tabitha's time travel worked so well in the Jughead thing because it really tied into the relationship. Betty and Archie, obviously, like, they ignored that when that came to their relationship. But there were, like, little notes throughout the Cheryl storyline, same sort of thing. She used the pyrokinetic thing to affect to really, like, push forward the place that she was with her mother. So it was used as a tool in the episode rather than the main part of the plot, and I thought that was really wonderful.
Very funny, the lifelong comic book fan, Alex, is like, this superpower thing? Ugh, can't deal.
Can't deal with it. Can't deal with it.
What were you going to say, Pete?
I'm still just a little disappointed that we're not addressing the fog here.
Nothing but talking about the fog.
No. If you opened your door and saw a creepy person in the fog and you know that there is this person called the Trash Bag Killer out there, would you just close the door and just like make out and be like, hey, there's nothing wrong. Like, everybody be cool. There's just a creepy dude outside. No big deal.
I don't want to complicate this too much, but did you guys see how ripped the Trash Bag Killer is this episode? Because if I saw him out there, I might be like a little conflicted.
Wow, interesting.
So you would be like, oh, maybe I'll leave this door unlocked. I don't know what's happening.
I mean, he's got a tight bod, that Trash Bag Killer.
Oh my God.
You love trash bags. It's a turn on for you. And the fact that he's got washboard abs is a whole, just another bonus.
Yeah, my biggest turn on is Tuesdays and Thursdays. That's when I take out the garbage.
Garbage day, yeah.
Oh, garbage day.
Two garbage days.
Look at this. Two garbage days? What kind of...
Okay, Prince Zalber.
What the fuck?
You guys don't? You take out trash on the first day and trash and recycling on the second day.
What?
Honestly.
Really?
The fact that I know I'm sure we do have more garbage days and there's garbage trucks driving around Brooklyn. I just stick to the one I know.
Okay.
I don't go chasing waterfalls
outside your apartment.
Don't go chasing waterfalls when it comes to multiple garbage days. But what I was going to say is, we had talked about Glenn being the trash bag killer. Based on that ripped body, my theory of Glenn is over. Unless Glenn was ripped for a brief time in the middle.
He just worked out for a couple of days, did a bunch of Wii sports.
It did. Moose is also pretty ripped. Like, Moose just mysteriously being like, hey, I was, once they shut down the highway because I'm a trucker, I was like, oh.
You think Moose is the trash bag? I don't think Moose is ripped. Moose is bearing out. Like, he is a bear right now.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Well, let's talk about all, because Moose showing up, I was like, isn't Moose dead, cult, gargoyle, trucker? I was like, which of these wild things? Moose is like the catch-all for any season on Riverdale. And the fact that he shows up, I'm like, 100% Moose is going to end up being fog. Moose is fog. Moose is going to be fog.
I thought it was the magical fog bringing Moose back to life here for Kevin.
But let's talk about the Kevin storyline in general, because I love Tabitha in the beginning being like, they're like talking about what to do in the town. She's like, Kevin is a person. I was like, yes, thank you, Tabitha. He's a friend of ours.
Yeah.
Great news to be reminded of that. And then we get Kevin fighting with Tony and all that. And that we actually got a nice arc for Kevin in this episode. Fangs ends up being the one who is like becoming a bit of a villain, man, in their relationship. Getting a little aggressive out there.
Yeah.
But then you have like
Fangs being hurt by Kevin, which, you know, I get it. Like, he left you high and dry one time, and now it's like you can't reschedule a meeting because of the fog.
But everybody did. I don't know.
I reschedule a lot of stuff based on fog.
I know you want to talk about Kevin. Just while we're talking about the Fangs thing for a little bit, I think I'm having a hard time processing my emotions towards the Tony Fangs relationship, but I also, even beyond that, Fangs is like a loose cannon at this point. Him being like, we got to raise baby Anthony to kill ghoulies, or ghoulies are going to kill him.
Tony's like, what a weird line.
Back up the truck for a second, Fangs.
He's like, I want to raise my kid old school.
Yeah. Which, like, I get it. Like, there's a certain level of I understand what Fangs is going through, but maybe there's something about the performance that's just a little too insanely over the top, even for Riverdale, for me, where it's just he's intense. And then him screaming almost at Kevin by the end of the episode again, it was like, I was like, just take it like down 10%, Fangs, and then I will understand where you're coming from.
Although I'm very curious, like, how Fangs would raise that kid. Like, is it like you got to learn to fight before you can walk? Like, when do you introduce weapons? Like, how does it really work? You know what I mean?
He's going to raise baby Anthony as a snake. He's going to feed him whole mice. He's going to make him slither.
Gives him a warm
You got to be a serpent before you can be a serpent. Anthony, curl up on this rock in the sun. It's time to sleep.
Baby's too shed a lot of skin, so. Again, like that thing at the end of the episode, he's been really hurt by Kevin, I guess, which we haven't really gotten to see a whole lot.
Yeah, it was nice to see him kind of be able to put a little voice to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, he's hurt Kevin. He's hurt Kevin a lot too, which I think he's forgetting, because the conversation. So I feel like Kevin being reunited with Moose and feeling like he has value. Moose is like, exactly. Moose, even though their relationship has sort of been messed up over the years with Moose.
I mean,
not being able to come out and all of that, but Moose coming to him and saying, like, I care for you. Like, that's something that Kevin hasn't heard, at least that we've been privy to, hardly at all in the whole run of this show. So I think that the fact that that happens for him, he has the nightmare of the Gargoyle King, and that feels dealing with some trauma.
Wait. All right, come on. All right, so when he says to Kev, though, like, what happened to Broadway? I mean, that cut like a knife. Like, Moose knows, like, his love of that. And, like, then the whole, like, hey, remember that thing? And then Kevin being like, oh, you mean the most traumatizing thing that's ever happened to me? Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. Yeah, like, oh, my God. And then we get the kind of flashback, like, oh.
And to have all that, and then for Kevin to come out of the fog, sort of having a little bit more value and being more of a rounded person,
but
I was like,
it seems like fog makes you more buff, and like, because Moose look bigger than we've seen him before.
He's just wearing a nice jacket. He's wearing a nice jacket.
I gotta get more into the fog. That's what I'm saying. I gotta get more fog.
Yeah, my exercise regime is to go to a foggy place and hang, and it's working.
Yeah, you can feel it. You're more ripped now.
Yeah.
You went to flex, but then it went the other way. It kind of went down.
Yeah, I did a classic Popeye.
You're low on spinach.
I thought the Kevin Moose relationship is great. It was so nice to be reminded of that. It fondly took me back to Bizarro Dale, the episode, which is like the most romantic Kevin Moose episode. And just seeing them together again was really, really nice. Cody Kearsley does a great job with Moose. I also, on the nightmare front, the lighting that they used in the hallway was the same lighting that they used for prom night when the Gargoyle King attacks. And I thought that was just like a fun little lighting throwback there to remind us of that. So just to kind of wrap up the Kevin Moose storyline here, What do you think it means? I do think there is meaning to the fact that he still sees the fog in the hallway when nobody else in the episode does. It, to me, it feels like Kevin feels safe in Moose's arms, but there's always this worry in the background that it's going to go horribly wrong for him at some point. So what does this mean for Kevin?
I think we see that exact thing happen. Like, he does feel comfortable. He calls up Fangs and is like, hey, let's do shared custody. I feel like I don't want to have this fight. And instantly Fangs is like, I'm coming for you. And it's like, whoa, unnecessary. So I think he finally felt safe for a second and then is immediately sort of pushed off that safe base. So I just hope we get to see more episodes like this where Kevin has some story and does feel like he's moving in a better direction, as opposed to him being in the thrall of Percival and being just a henchman, essentially, doing awful things.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's get him away from Mayor Pee-Pee for sure. But it's this kind of thing of, like, can Kevin love the fog like obviously Moose does? And, you know, can he be happy in this kind of foggy relationship, you know? I hope so, because, like, you know, it would be nice to see Kevin get a couple W's. You know, Kevin gets the short end of the stick too much. So I'm hoping that he can learn to love the fog and be happy with the moose in it.
Hashtag love the fog. And Alex, just so you know, W is short for win, which is like the opposite of loss.
Okay. I don't get that, but I appreciate it. Why don't we move on to one of the other storylines? I'm sure there's other things that we can talk about there, but we can talk about Cheryl's. That's sort of off on its own a little bit, and some big stuff goes down. Broad overview of this storyline is Penelope comes back. She is a nun now. She is training with the Sisters of the Quiet Mercy in the Himalayas, and she needs
let's take a breath and enjoy the show. I mean, this is just fun. You know, like, Cheryl's mom comes back completely dressed as a nun and goes, I've been in the Himalayas. I've now joined this, like, I mean, what a show. The fact that this could happen and it makes complete sense to be like, oh yeah, this is right in line with what's happening. Unbelievable.
I agree completely. When she shows up in the nun's habit and Cheryl is us in that moment, she's like, you're an ex-dom, convicted felon, serial killer, and now you're a nun? That made me think of, is there someone on staff at Riverdale who, like, lives, is like the Dr. Kirtle, who's the historian, who they're like, hey, call up the historian and ask her what's happening, what the history of Penelope is. And she's like, yeah, I'll tell you.
Person. That is, like, is that the story editor's job, or is it the continuity chief, or
live producer's job?
It would be a script supervisor, sort of on an episode by episode basis. But in the longer term, it'd be, you know, just like a more of a showrunner-y.
I'll tell you what, that has to be. If there is somebody who legitimately feels very strongly about keeping the continuity of Riverdale, I feel so bad for them, because the show so purposefully ignores continuity all the time, down to, not to jump out of the storyline, but Alice frames up this thing where she's like, this is going to be the worst fog since the Great Fog of 1922. If you remember, we celebrated the 75th anniversary Jubilee, and I think like season one or season two, which doesn't time out with that at all. So they've already established that Riverdale was established 75 years earlier, but also was around in 1922, and also, I think, was around in like the 1600s at the same time. So that person has to be tearing their hair out.
Yeah. The fog was the first chocolate shop, and then later came the buildings. But yes, it is. Well, I do think this season, especially, they've been done a lot of work to reminding us of all of the wild things that have happened on this show. So much of this show is now like, hey, character, remember you were this, and this, and now you're this. That happened to Moose in this episode, and of course here with Penelope coming back.
Yeah. I mean, the whole Alice flex of like, I'm the media in this town, like I can. Don't worry, I'll keep everybody inside being like, the fog that we haven't seen in 100 years is back. Everyone stay inside the fog. The fog is coming. The fog.
And I actually really like, I mean, Alice is becoming a great villain. She's like, you are mad at her, I think, throughout this episode at the beginning and the end. She has this Welcome to Night Vale, if you know that podcast vibe, when she's doing that bit about the fog, talking about how horrible it is. And I love that she goes into great, takes pains to be like, and here's how I'm going to get around the weather girl to do our fog announcement. I was like,
who cares? Just why go on and do the weather. You don't need to explain this.
And let me be honest, is there a weather person at this network, or is it just Alice doing a million
times? Who is Alice's boss, and why is Alice allowed to do any story she wants?
I have a better question. Is clearly in Pops, the TV is turned to RIVW all day long. What is that programming like? Alice comes on, does a 5-minute interview with Percival every day, clearly, and then she pops in and does the weather. What is the other content for the rest of the day? What's going on that channel?
Well, I'm sure Alice does some like readings of her favorite poetry. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's the Alice show nonstop.
She's gonna be so hoarse by the end of the day.
There's got to be so many FCC violations against her. It's unbelievable. You don't see her.
I bet she does a live Riverdale podcast.
Oh, jeez. You think she's doing? Which one is she of the three of us? Is she sort of?
Who's the Alice on this podcast?
Yeah. No, Alex Alice makes a lot of sense.
That does make sense. We were talking about Cheryl's storyline. Go ahead, Pete.
Cheryl's mom showing up in full nunned out and being like, could I please have a warm bed and some scrumptious meal? I was just like, oh my God. And Cheryl having to make this tough decision of like, no, I banished you, but like, I guess I'll let you use the shower and I'll feed you. Like, pretty big of Cheryl, pretty nice. Like, could have easily turned her away. And, you know, I mean, with everything else that's going on, I don't know if we would have felt that bad about it. But like, the fact that she opened her home back up to her insane mom is, it says a lot about Cheryl.
I mean, the thing is, maybe I'm foolish, but I do sort of buy her story. Mm-hmm. Like, she does seem like she's not – we didn't see her wink.
We didn't see
the mask fall.
She said, I've been in the Himalayas. I mean, that is a pristine nun outfit that looks like it was just bought. You know what
I mean? She's spinning around, yelling at the mountains.
So there's two things here, right? Like, to treat this legitimately. One is, yes, I do believe her, and she's absolutely saying this. But that doesn't preclude her from being absolutely evil in the next episode or being like, yes, now I fly. Now I fly of my own command. But the second thing is that she signed up with the original Sisters of Quiet Mercy, which is already an evil nun organization.
Not a great nunnery. And
that's the nunnery they tried to capture and like mind wipe Cheryl, right? Like,
yeah. So here's the thing that I think is weird about this choice, that maybe we will actually see more of Penelope and more blowback as the season continues, is they are the nunnery that did conversion therapy. That might have been a Riverdale local thing, and the Himalayas one doesn't care. They're like, live how you want to live. But the big revelation at the end of the episode here is that Penelope hid letters from Heather, who is Charles' crush in junior high school, for years. She reads all of them, and Penelope all but confesses that part of the reason that she was so horrible to Cheryl is because she was probably secretly a lesbian or bisexual as well. At least she had feelings towards women, and she took it out on Cheryl. So if they do conversion therapy at this Sisters of the Quiet Mercy, this is going to be a big problem for Penelope going forward, if they do want to return to that plot line.
I wonder if they'll go back to that. I do think that it will still be evil, but probably in a different way, I would guess. But like, if when you're applying to nunneries, the Sisterhood of the Quiet Mercy has got to be a safety nunnery. Like, you want to aim a little bit higher, I think.
Doing one of the more prestigious. Yeah,
nunneries.
But I mean, that's the thing. You can't
action and got rejected.
Yeah you got to be. You can't have Cheryl's mom's resume and get into a nicer nunnery.
Whole point of nunneries, though, to take you clean how you are as you present yourself without worrying about your past?
I don't know. I haven't dropped by. I haven't dropped by a lot of nunneries. Sure. Alex, you're more of a nunnery guy.
It's been
guy,
a while,
right?
Since I've seen Sister Act. That's my only real.
It's good research. They were. Yeah. You got to get back in the habit.
Oh boy.
Good. Let's make sure we get that in a couple more times, just to be very clear.
Just
about
one. Well, just one for the rule of threes, guys. That's a
but come on
principle.
Though, like Cheryl being like seeing her go right for the doll, which she kind of is dressed like that creepy doll a little bit, and then immediately blows out the candle, turns it over, and smacks her mom in the head. I mean, this is just great Cheryl content. I mean, this is just Cheryl.
It was great. And then, like I said earlier, the way that she reveals she's pyrokinetic by turning up the heat on Penelope and saying, you know what, this is it. This is enough. And that does work as this torture to force Penelope to be like, wait. I have these letters from Heather. That's what I wanted to tell you. I thought that was a great character use of the power.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also a perfect, like, Cheryl's evil mom being like, I could fake to be a nun, come back in there and drop this one more bomb on her. And then, like, it's all part of her evil plan.
Well, but this is a bomb that she drops on Cheryl that actually makes her feel better, I think. The fact that she wasn't just ignored by Heather when she was young, that Heather did write her letters, even though her mom was keeping them. It does feel, at least, I don't know what the punishment for Cheryl is by her doing that. So it does feel like she is doing something that is actually making Cheryl feel better for a change.
Right, but that's what I mean. It's part of her evil plan to get back in to the house on Cheryl's good side. I don't trust it, man.
She just wants to get back in those walls, the most comfortable place to sleep in the world. I am very excited about Heather
coming.
Where's
Nana Rose? I was like, where's Nana Rose? Why isn't she seeing what's going on? Like, oh.
Wasn't available this episode.
Is Nana Rose a doll yet or like a weather formation?
I'll check with the script supervisor. We'll find out. The love the Heather moments. I thought Madeline Petch really crushed it in terms of the emotion of these scenes. Yeah. Very excited to see this character finally come into the show after teasing it for so many seasons. Lizzie, great plot line to go back to. It's going to mean a lot, not just for Cheryl, but I think ultimately for Cheryl and Tony as well, as those things continue to progress there. So however that sort of upends the apple cart and turns around the relationship things, I think it's going to be really interesting to watch.
Agreed.
Why? It's
very exciting to get this kind of like intro of a new character. You know, but it's kind of like we're trying to get people away from the Cheryl and Tony of it all, which, you know, I'm not on board with. I'm still fighting.
I don't think it's going to take Cheryl away from Cheryl is already as far away from Tony as humanly possible. They're in entirely different plot lines.
Still a chance. Still a chance.
Seeing Cheryl with her junior high crush, whatever happens, if it works, if it doesn't work. We don't know anything about what Heather is like now. It's going to cause a reaction from Tony, which Tony is already at a place where she's having friction with Fangs. So we're heading towards some drama. How it turns out, we'll see, but I'm excited to watch.
And you got Fangs. Yeah, Fangs is sort of slipping off the map, I think, giving into some anger. I feel like we're not just headed to drama. We're maybe headed to Shoni. And I also have a theory about there's been a lot of talk about what powers are coming. With Veronica, I think Alex, you speculated getting some sort of ice power. What if that goes to Tony? Mm. Because then it puts her and Cheryl on like a nice sort of track.
Fire and ice.
And that does tie into the whole water ghost thing.
Yeah.
So it could be water and fire.
Water is warm ice. Just like fog is downstairs cloud.
Oh, my God.
I'm sort of the weather girl of this podcast that Alice is trying to oust.
I hope you never get sick or I'm jumping into your spot.
Because you're that Alice, I know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be really good. Why don't we jump over and talk about Veronica and Reggie? Because this is non-powered, as we mentioned, neither of them have powers. But over the course of this episode, because they're both trapped in the casino alone, they play a little strip poker, they hook up again, and then have a real non-fight conversation about the relationship that seemingly finally ends it for good. Again, just on an emotional level, I thought this was great. And giving Camila Mendes and Charles Melton chance to really like flex their acting muscles, it was a pleasure to watch, even though it was very sad.
I really, this is the only time I'll agree with you, Alex, about the whole like good for people to kind of talk about their relationships. I thought the way that they talked about.
Not going to delve into that too much.
I thought the way that they talked.
Enjoy.
The way that they talked about their relationship and the way they kind of like hashed things out was very cool. And the fact that like Reggie stuck up for himself was like, yo, that painting is creepy AF. And yeah. like the fact that you're keeping that is a symbol of something that we shouldn't be, you know, holding on to. Like, and then the fact that she's like, you're right, we're in a toxic kind of cycle. We have to break this, you know, if we want to get any further. I thought it was very cool and mature, and I liked the way it kind of unfolded. And I'm kind of happy for both of them, which is weird.
Oh, really? Because I agree with you. I thought that it was, and it felt, it mirrored real relationships where you're like, oh, what if we had sex now? Maybe. And then afterwards you're like, oh, we got to talk about all the rest of this stuff. So
well,
I really like
that. Part's out of the way. Let's get down to business. I have to
deal with the real shit.
I just want to go over.
Yeah. And I really appreciated that. And I thought it was like, I love the flirtation of it. And then afterwards, getting into the real stuff for real. And to talk about Archie as sort of the ghost or even the fog that they're sort of awash in their relationship, I thought was true. And the sort of inherent flaw with their relationship, if they can't get past the fact that Reggie is like, I'm your second pick, obviously. Yeah. And Veronica being like, well, I'm Archie's second pick, so isn't that fine? And he's like, no. That's not how it works.
The line of the episode, just really quick, the line of the episode for me and the biggest gut punch was, we're all someone's consolation prize.
Come on, dude.
That was a really well-crafted, really well-written line, and it got to the heart of exactly what you're saying, Justin, in terms of how these characters feel. And I don't think...
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, to prognosticate, it means Veronica's to be like, you know what? I'm nobody's consolation prize. I'm going to go after Archie, and that creates its own drama. Or maybe she just realizes, no, I need to concentrate on myself and figure out how to not feel like this. It really gets to this undercurrent of what Camila Mendes has been playing all season. We've been joking about. They always cut it on her with a glass of rum, just sitting on her own, drinking and thinking. But this really points to how she's been feeling. She's like, you know what? I'm playing a shadow of my father with my second choice boyfriend back in a town I never wanted to live in. That's what my life is. And it's so sad and it hurts so much to watch. But I thought it was really beautiful played. And to put it out there in that way was really nicely done as well.
And I also think that a character as strong as Veronica, when she sort of owns all of that, and I think maybe when she finally defeats her father, the painting, at the end of this episode.
Well, we don't see it wrapped up yet. She just calls for the wrappings.
True, but much like Palladium, twine and brown paper are a painting's weakness.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Once you cover up a painting, it's over. Then it's just a rectangle.
Right. It's still got to happen. It's just, you could have the supplies sitting there all day. It doesn't mean you're going
to
do it.
But there's nothing stronger than twine. Have you ever used twine? That stuff is
have you ever tried
like
to open
Wonder
twine?
Woman's lasso. Oh, yeah, no, exactly.
God, I couldn't even imagine to have the strength to open twine.
Just the name twine. It just is strength. It conveys strength.
I'm going to disagree. I think the best line of it is Whatever Happened to Broadway, Kevin. I thought that was the most powerful
Well, but I think it's the same sort of theme, right? Where Kevin is talking about, no, this was my second choice. This was my consolation prize, was
great
teaching
call.
Here. He's trying to be a winner in this custody battle, and ultimately he realizes, no, I don't want to be a consolation prize, or I'm okay being a consolation prize. I'm okay sharing custody on this kid. I'm okay being back together with Moose, my high school boyfriend. This is all going to be okay with me because at least it's not terrifying. And at least not throwing myself into a dangerous situation.
You know, it's not okay is those poor students whose papers were not being graded well. I mean, Kevin was having flashbacks and like writing all over somebody's. Somebody's going to get their paper back and be like, what does this even mean?
Yeah. Hey, Kevin. Hey, Professor Kevin. I got a G for Gargoyle King on my test. What is that? Is that worse than an F? But while you're saying favorite lines, mine is, it's like a Stephen King movie out there.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Right. Which one? Like it is.
Christine? Cujo? Which one?
That's the thing. I don't know. It just feels like a Stephen King movie. Shawshank?
The Green Mile?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Not sure which one. The just to put a wrap on this particular storyline, I think, like,
how
we
often
about,
do you look at a man's shoes? Sorry.
There, there's a lot of different places, like we talked about, that Veronica could go. What's going to happen with Reggie at this point? Because he feels like one of those characters would be like, well, now you're at a loss. You don't have powers. You're not dating Veronica. You're not working at the casino. You're sitting in a car dealership playing poker with wise guys, and that's all you have going on. Added the fact that Charles Melton seems to be on this world tour for the past couple of months, I'm a little worried about him maybe leaving the show. What do you guys think?
I think from a plot in the show, I think he could easily slip under the auspices of PP.
No, don't.
Because
no.
he's got some he's upset. He's got some vulnerabilities.
No.
He's going to open up a strip poker joint with his buddies in the Gabagool division of the show.
Hey, wise guys, I tried this thing with my ex-girlfriend, and it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Hey, let's give it a shot.
I think he's just going to kind of fall in with the wise guys, and maybe will be kind of like, if somebody needs some muscle, they'll go to Reg every once in a while. But I'm worried about him. But I'm also excited for him because he's not in this relationship where he's not wanted. So hopefully that opens things up for him. But yeah, I'm a little worried about the people he's hanging out with for sure.
Should we talk about Jughead and Tabitha? Because I thought this was a really interesting storyline as well. Like I mentioned earlier, treating the time travel thing seriously and using it as an emotional father to talk about how Tabitha is worried about Jughead, the slow reveal over the course of the episode that she Doctor Stranged in Infinity Warded up and went through, I think it was 1,384.
She didn't do this, but it was like, you know, there was a lot of going on.
Well, yeah, it's also, it was weird that she was like, I went through 1,384 scenarios and we beat him twice.
Twice.
Yeah. So,
all right.
Pretty
so
good.
So there's options. You got some options.
But so the way you're that saying she holds, there's a chance.
The way that they planned out that thing, both from the perspective of like, her motivating factor is, oh God, I know Jughead is going to die no matter what, and I'm terrified of that. Jughead not having that information and kind of barreling ahead, but also letting that tie into this idea in, for Riverdale, a subtle way of Pops being this literal lighthouse in the fog, this safe place that everybody can go. I thought there was a lot of really good, interesting, well-done stuff in this storyline.
Yeah, I really liked the kind of like Jughead being like, so you can time travel. I'd like to hear if it's, you know, I'm just going to put it out. Hey, not too much pressure. I like he was like, I'm just going to take my shot here. Like, you know, I don't want to be a pest about this. And I thought that she was like pretty cool about it. Like, hey, I tried. Like, I tried a bunch of times, but like, there's this thing like fixed point, you know. So I thought that was like cool. And then when she was like, she says like she wrestles with this idea of like, should I tell him? I was very happy that she did. And like, it was nice to see them kind of connect in that way. The one part that I didn't like was the Jughead like, hey, stop reading my mind thing, which is tough because it's like, well, it's either complete silence and I can't hear or I can read, you know what I mean? So I was like, oh, this, they kind of revisited that. And I was like, okay, you're going to kind of make something big about this later.
Well, no, but I think the reason that worked for me, I agree with you, Pete. I felt that when I was watching the scene, but in retrospect, it makes sense because Tabitha is panicked. He's going to find out that she knows he's going to die. So that's why she had the reaction. She was, it was more
or just like anybody else, like, hey, don't fucking read my thoughts, man. That's creepy. Yeah. That not cool.
And I feel like he can't help if he's using that to hear anything. Like, it's going to be hard to be like, is that a thought or something you're saying?
It's hard to tell. I can't. It's not like I could turn it off and on. There's degrees, I guess.
I mean, I agree with. First off, I love Jughead's turtleneck look right from the jump. I was like, this guy is not. He's wearing his author headshot look already. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting. And then secondly, yeah, Pete, you said it already, but like the thing of Jughead at the beginning being like, hey, babe, there's a couple things I want to talk to you about. Ketchup, we got enough ketchup, good.
I filled up all the ketchups.
Those ketchups are good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just wanted to check the sugar packets are all set up.
You
time traveled. Cool. I guess that's the bigger one I want to talk about. Like, he so casually walks up to it. I thought it was super funny. And then the way at the end of the episode, once Tabitha tells him this horrible situation that they're in, and that Jughead is sort of the hero. Basically, she's like, you're the only one that can match Percival.
Yeah.
You're his other when it comes to brain powers. He's just like, we'll figure it out. I'm just like, this guy's confident.
Well, but he's like not, though. Oh, the way that he kind of was like, hey, just... we can't give up hope was beautiful. I mean, it was like this thing of like, hey, we've done it twice. I know things are bad and maybe I'm going to die. But like kind of it really felt like Jughead's hero moment. And he wasn't a douche about it. Like he was very cool about it. He was just like, hey, you know, we can't give up hope. And I was like, that's beautiful, man.
Well, I think first of all, I love the line. Sadly, this is not the first time I've been destined to die.
Just yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's just like, I've been here before.
It's Riverdale. This show's insane. Yeah,
did you see Alice's podcast earlier? This show's crazy.
Yeah, she's crazy.
The
She didn't know the word loss at the beginning. And then later, she nailed it.
The... look that Cole Sprouse gives, though, when he's hugging Tabitha at the end, I do think there's a lot of things that you could read into that. One is that he's worried about Tabitha, but I do think there's an underlying thing of him being like, it's okay, we'll get through this, we'll figure this out, it's not fate, etc. But he's not sure. Like, obviously, he's still worried about it. He just doesn't want to worry her more.
They held on to that hug for a reason. Like, we're going to cut back to that hug, and he's going to be like, hey, time travel. She's going to be like, Jughead, no. And he's going to come on, please.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
That could
They're going to cut back to that hug and be like, we have been hugging for 3 episodes. Yeah. Please.
Well, that's why
I always cut back to the hug, man.
I always do long hugs just in case it's a fixed point for time travel.
Yes. Also, shout out to, I love how they're playing Tabitha now. She is now at the point where she is so fed up with all of this. Her read on when the news report comes up at the end revealing that Percival is now the mayor of Riverdale. Her, oh, brother, now what? Made me laugh out loud.
Well, she's done it 1,384 times. Of course, she's just like, oh, here goes Alice again spouting off. about the mayor, but I also thought it was very funny in that scene where Alice is just like, Percival's mayor, and the Jughead's like, Dictator Pickens. Made me think like, hey, have you driven through Riverdale? It's that town with the dictator? That one town that has it. All the other towns are cute, upstate towns.
Most
and
of
then
upstate
Riverdale
New
has
York
a dictator.
Not. Yeah. I also like that move. I thought that was really smart from a plot direction that we're all... as viewers, we're so focused on everybody's relationship and these big discussions they're having and all the moves they're going through that you do forget about Percival and Alice, or at least I forgot about them through most of the episode. And then at the end, when it comes out like, oh, of course he made this move where they dissolved the council, of course he became mayor. Well, because you're so – as a viewer, you're so focused on other things that are going on with these characters that you love. And it's the same sort of thing. Like, it was a sleight of hand thing of making you look at the fog so you're not looking over here when this other thing happens.
But
so, it was good.
What would be nice, though, is if Tabitha's been through all these different things, people could start coming to Tabitha and being like, hey, did this happen? Can you help me with this? Like, should I stay with Veronica or maybe I should move on? Like –
the time travel thing is like a total potential quagmire. I think that was part of the reason for her explaining things the way she did, where she was like, it's really complicated. I've done it a bunch of times. Let's not worry about it. Because they shouldn't do that. Like, we can't have those conversations constantly on the show.
Yeah, I agree constantly, but we could have one later where the character is maybe at a tipping point, like Veronica, go to Tabitha and be like, hey, can you walk me through two different scenarios? One where Archie marries Veronica and one where Archie marries Betty. Do you think that's something that's ever been done before? Anybody here read comic books? I know, Alex, you hate them. But
I don't like them.
Yeah.
Just to name it, there was a comic book series where famously six issues where in the first three, I think it was Archie and Veronica were married, and the second Archie and Betty were married, and Archie sort of saw both sides of his life that way. I thought in this episode, I thought that could be some potential fodder for a future
episode. Could you imagine what would happen if the end of the season, they figure out like the only way of saving the world is if Archie marries Veronica?
No, I mean, that's crazy. And Archie's like, sure, I don't know.
Sure, like, whatever. It's cool. That would be crazy. But we could see a scenario where, like, Tabitha travels to two different branching futures, and we do see exactly what it would like going forward. That would be fun. I'd watch that.
So I'm talking about.
One thing before we move on, to kind of talk about the Cheryl-Heather relationship. Like, I got a lot of high hopes because this, you know, gives a lot of shout-outs to The Notebook, where there's letters, and it's basically quoted as said, she wrote you letters almost every day, which is an exact quote from The Notebook. So, I think, you know, I mean, that's
a lot of other stuff happens in The Notebook that I don't think is going to happen in this show, but I like where your head's at.
Why don't we jump to the last storyline, which is Betty and Archie over the course of this. They hang out in the house together. The big news is we find out that Betty's period is late, so she doesn't know whether she's pregnant or not. They can't get a pregnancy test until the fog lifts. So they take the time to have a conversation. We find out Betty's backstory with TBK, how she actually got out of that trap. It's very harrowing. And then Archie pledges himself to her no matter what. He says he's all in, whatever the results of the pregnancy test. And by the end, the big cliffhanger here is we see them looking at the pregnancy test, but we don't get the answer.
Yeah, but they don't look happy. They do not look happy. They looked very sad when they look at it.
Well, that's because those tests are confusing, Pete.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like how many lines?
Yeah. What does this line mean?
They look at it like there's a plus and an at symbol. What does that mean? Yeah. Which one is that? Check the directions.
They look at it and it's a tiny gargoyle king head.
You got to know. You got to go there online and at the company and then they tell you. If you don't at them, they don't.
I mean, on that note, not many people know this, but the Gargoyle King alphabet actually came from pregnancy tests.
Yeah, it's true. That's why you're going to have a little baby with horns.
I did appreciate
stick hands.
I did appreciate Betty being kind of like, hey, what are we doing here? Although it was interesting that Archie was like, what do you mean I'm totes in love with you? And she was like, okay.
Why was this the third time they've had that conversation? That was my question.
Because when you're not feeling it, maybe sometimes you ask again because you're like, are we still into this?
I feel like there's some sort of selective amnesia going on here where they keep forgetting they're in a relationship.
Well, they've got a lot going on. Let's just say that. So maybe you forget, like, what did we say our status is? Because I got to say, based on the kiss and the transition from when they were downstairs to in the bed, things
music
are going pretty well.
Yeah,
the music, the sort of distant sex music. Yeah, I think things are going fine. But I did think it was weird where they were like, "Are we dating?" I was like, "Yes, you sort of live together." Like, I think you are. But it feels like they are dating, but it also feels like there's some sort of cloud of trouble over this relationship.
I give them a lot of credit. If someone snuck in my back door, it was like, hey, I think there's a creepy person outside. I don't know if I would be able to just like make out and go on with my life. I feel like it would be like, hey, we need to come up with a plan if this serial killer is then going to come in and try to kill us. That maybe is just me.
It was surprising to me that that didn't come back in any way. I wonder if we are going to find out that creeper, for example, is the person who called Betty and Archie about the bomb. We still haven't gotten any clarity about that. Maybe there is somebody lurking and watching Betty who is not TBK.
It sounded like on the old ham radio, there was a mention of a bomb in a basement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was something going on there, too. I couldn't really hear what was happening when Tabitha was listening to the ham radio. So there's some clues being laid down for something that I think is going to pay off down the line.
Reality seems very loose here. Like the ham radio felt like a signal was coming in. That guy.
We didn't see Archie's dog all episode.
Yeah. Yeah, that was foremost on my mind, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Still nothing about the cat.
The Betty Archie thing.
The INGO.
yeah, to your point, like I thought this conversation was great. I love this. I loved this backstory, the way that Petty played it. It was horrifying. Extremely harrowing and upsetting, other than ripped TBK. And Archie explaining why he's staying in Riverdale again. You know, he's given this speech before, but I think it's always good to double down on it. And obviously, it was important to talk about with Betty potentially being pregnant. So overall, like a lot of the things in the episode, I thought it was good to give these characters time to actually talk so that hopefully in 3 episodes' time, we don't again have to be like, so are we dating?
Or as what's they're holding going their baby, like, are we dating? Little Archie Jr. is wondering if we're dating.
Was it weird to anybody else that, like, she was like, yeah, I had to, like, cut up this body in front of, you know, and Archie was just like, cool, cool, cool. Hey, let me tell you a story about how I live in Riverdale and how I plan to be here for a long time.
I mean, I would think that was weird, but this is Archie we're talking about.
All right. Okay. I would have maybe had some questions or at least been like, hey.
When Betty said that they played some classical music while TBK was standing behind her and sort of showing her how to dismember
how
her body.
To do it. And with his guidance, I was able to.
Do you think
to...
the classical music was Unchained Melody by the Righteous Brothers?
Ooh, nice. Was I don't know like if that's considered ghost? Classical, but yeah, it was Ghost.
It was like a Ghost style thing.
Oh, my love.
Beautiful.
Wow. My darling.
I feel like anytime Archie's given the opportunity to give his I'm the spirit of Riverdale speech, he will. Like at the inevitable Cheryl and Tony wedding. It's like, anybody have anything they want to say? Archie's going to stand up.
I'm
going
to throw
like,
something out there. This is just a theory. I'm just developing this right now. But Archie has that like very shocking red hair, right? Like what is also usually very red in specific places? A parrot. Do you think that Archie is secretly a large human parrot and only knows
certain
phrases like, I'm the spirit of Riverdale.
Interesting.
So what are we doing here?
In a show where you're like,
Polly want a cracker. Polly want a Tostito.
Archie want a Dorito.
Cool Ranch,
Archie
baby.
Want to open a boxing gym.
It's just a theory. It's just something I'm throwing out there.
Oh okay, anybody weigh in on Twitter for Archie is a parrot as the, Alex's hot new theory.
Okay, Mr. Cat Briefcase.
More believable and established. More believable. Established history.
I'll throw this out there. Archie's weakness right now is palladium. Palladium is stones. What are parrots' weaknesses? They also die if they get hit with stones.
Okay. Where did you hear that?
The parrot encyclopedia. Yeah, this is interesting. What do you think? Are they pregnant? Are they not pregnant? What are we going to find out?
Not pregnant.
Pregnant.
Ooh, good old-fashioned debate. Justin, go first. Why are they pregnant?
I just feel like you've gone through the whole rigmarole of doing this. It would be strange to me to just not do it.
Didn't they have a kid in the River Vale?
Yeah, they got pregnant and then lost it to a water ghost.
Right.
After Betty and everyone killed Archie.
Right.
But let me throw this out to you. I'm starting to think of River Vale as almost like an overture. A classical music thing, or an overture where like the orchestra will just like play little bits and pieces of the music that you're going to hear for the rest of the night as the beat, sort of a little to wet your whistle or give you a little teaser. It feels like Rivervale is sort of like the wild overture for this season, and the show is now picking and choosing little moments to sort of explore in a different way, in a slightly different way. And that's why I feel like this baby will.
Betty dismember a guy in the Rivervale event? Am I misremembering that? I feel like she did.
Yeah.
Yes, I think.
Yeah, there was the guy from the Lonely Highway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm misremembering that. But that I think season? You're right. Like, I think they are having things reverberate and change in different ways. I'll throw out there, because I was a little torn between positive or negative with the pregnancy test. I think if it had been earlier in the episode, it would have been negative so you could see their reactions and them say, okay, you know what, but I'm still all in even because of this negative pregnancy test, or maybe that actually would have caused some different emotional reactions. As is, at the end of the episode, I do think it's positive, and then we're going to pick up with what does that mean for them going forward as a relationship? How do they tell people that they're pregnant? Betty obviously has significant issues with her mom having her very young and out of wedlock, and Polly also having a baby out of wedlock. So what does that mean for her? What does that mean for her family history? And I think there's a lot more interesting things to play with Betty if she does have to deal with this than if she's negative and they just kind of move on from there.
I think it's going to be like Toffee. We're never going to hear about it again. And
a baby in a briefcase?
Yeah, we're just going to be like, oh, wait, didn't that, wasn't that too a far. Thing? And they'll be like, what? No, there was, yeah.
Yeah, that's too far. Before we wrap up here.
Well, before I got to just get up a couple things. Do you think Polly was a parrot? Famous parrot name.
I mean, maybe they're all parrots.
Wow.
Wow.
I don't know.
And one
You're
big
making
thing
that, some really convincing arguments here, Justin. For your for my parent, Archie's parent theory.
Hashtag Archie's
Archie
a parrot.
Yep.
I found this to be some strange behavior from Betty. She has a calendar with very large numbers.
Very large
But she makes
number.
Very tiny
very
X's
Very small
on the calendar.
X's.
Yeah. Also, the calendar seems to indicate that it's January in Riverdale, which is also kind of confusing, but I'll roll with that.
What was the X for?
For the days she hasn't gotten her period.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was like, you know.
This day's like, over.
Yep. Like you cross
does anyone do that in real life? Or do you? That's just a movie thing, right? Like, you're like, well, I finished Monday. Yep. See you later. Yep. Here comes Tuesday. And the other thing I wanted to say I thought was funny, like Moose says this, the lonely highway was shut down. Does that mean the whole road, they were just like, can't drive here anymore?
I guess. All those truckers lost their job?
What about all the people that live on that road?
Maybe it got shut down for big truck driving. Like, trucks are not allowed to drive there. They need to stay on the friendly highway or something.
Wow. Okay.
Any other moments from the episode you want to call out? I'll mention I like the line, coupe de town. That was fun. That was a fun turn of phrase.
I'm all for Cheryl talking about how she's a dragon now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's very Game of Thrones.
Oh, also, I liked Tony and Fag's little argument about the serpents and the reference that she's going to try to call them the Sweetwater Serpents and that they're going to be sort of a guardian angels type thing. That was super fun. That certainly points to more friction between Tony and Fangs as well, but I like that name. That was cute.
What's our Moose Kevin ship name? Is it Mevin?
Oh, it's Coos. Coos?
Coos?
Coos.
I like Coos. Moose Coos.
It's Coos. I prefer Mevin because then we can say Mevin is heaven or Mevin is
I like saying the Coos is loose.
The coos is loose, I will say that.
Yes, it is. And, were you guys at the end of the episode when they have the iPhone alarm for the pregnancy test? Were you guys kind of like, did you jump at that a little bit? Because that's the same alarm that I have on my phone. So I immediately looked over my phone. I was like,
wow.
My phone's going off.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Time to wake up.
Pavlovian.
Yeah, right?
My thing with that was I was like, and when I've had pregnancy tests, weights, we didn't set an alarm. Like, it's not like in the second you need to be like, hurry, look. It's now we have this.
If you
thing.
Go too far, then you're not pregnant anymore.
Exactly.
That's definitely not how they work.
You got a couple seconds window, and then that image disappears forever.
Exactly.
The real, for those of you that have never looked at a pregnancy test, it's mostly like, is that a line? Is that? It looks like the fairy.
What color is that? What color?
It really is. Even for as much time as you look at the instructions, only when the test is finished are you like, what are the rules of this? I forget completely.
All right. Before we wrap up here, who is the MVP this episode? Pete, who's your MVP?
I got to go with Superpower Cheryl. It's a lot of fun, and she really brings a lot to this episode. So I was happy she was here.
Justin, what about you?
Tough call here because, I got to shout out that Barchi love we have in this episode.
Oh, really?
I,
I didn't notice it.
Interesting. I like that you've gone Barchi blind. You just don't even perceive
don't
it.
Don't even, black out.
That's good. It's probably better for all of us, including yourself. Yeah. But I'm going to go with Veronica in this episode because I thought she had the best sort of turn of the scene, and she was the mature conversation she had with Reggie in the relationship. Really, I was like, great Veronica episode.
I wanted to give it up for Veronica as well, but just to do something different, I'll say Moose. It was just nice seeing him back here. Yeah. Nice seeing him with Kevin. Just I like Cody Kearsley on the show. I hope the news that he's joining as the PE teacher means we're going to see him in a more recurring capacity over the course of the season. Because I think
it's just a potential.
Yeah, exactly. Like a whole dodgeball episode or
climbing the rope.
Ropes. Yes.
Oh, we have very similar high school experiences.
Gym things,
ropes, locker rooms, dodgeball. That's it. We're who we are.
If you would like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Riverdale. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Riverdale Dark on Twitter, Riverdale After on Instagram, Riverdale After Dark on Facebook, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you after dark.
Get your candles at Justin's Candle Shop in Riverdale. It's right next to one of the fires.